now that I've seen you, I wanted to tell you, I got my own radio show. It's on Saturday mornings from 8 till 10. It's called Making Bacon.
Hey, Beaver, the place to get help is on Channel 9, and I'll do a 10-5 about that motion lotion all over this here slab.
I don't know what that means, but I don't think you should be saying stuff like that.
Keep the shiny side up and the dirty side down.
Okay, whoa. Okay, look. It's just Saturday mornings from 8 till 10. Check it out. Making Bacon. CFRC 101.9.
Idle talk is a nuisance. Get out there and do it to it. Love and kisses.
Sit back, relax, and open your mind. Together, we'll travel throughout the city, the country, and across our planet in the pursuit of sonic phenomena that will challenge the limits of our perception, defining a new world for us to inhabit. We have crossed over to the night shift.
This is the story of the drowned boy. When I was a kid, my dad worked for Parks Canada. For most of my childhood, we lived by Riding Mountain National Park in Manitoba, but for 3 years, we lived in Prince Albert Park in Saskatchewan. I was in grades 3, 4, and 5 when we were in Waskasu, the town site in the park. They felt like forever years. To paraphrase the song, some of my changes were there. When I was in grade 4, it must have been during spring break, my dad took my sister and I to Saskatoon. Wait. Well, we're in the park, and before we go to Saskatoon, maybe I should talk about Archie, because he's going to show up later on. Archie Bellany, better known as Grey Owl, was the closest thing Parks Canada had to a historical celebrity, the Indian conservationist who turned from trapping beavers to living with them. In a weird coincidence, he'd lived for a while in Riding Mountain before wanting to get deeper into nature, and he ended up in Prince Albert National Park, building the cabin that he shared with his beavers, but not his wife, on the far shores of Adjuan Lake, out past Kingsmere Lake. Archie Bellany was not, it turns out, a noble savage, but an English bloke who had, as it was described at the time, gone native. When I was a kid, this was acknowledged, but as sort of a minor afterthought to the story. That this was the only real acknowledgement of aboriginality I encountered in the park system as a kid was not something I thought of as being strange, but there was a lot of apartheid and racism in Saskatchewan that I couldn't see or unpack for a good many years. So anyway, just keep that image in the back of your mind. Grey Owl and his beavers, off in nature up in Adjuan. But we were headed to Saskatoon with my dad. Me, 8 going on 9, and my sister, who was 3 years older than me. Being very much a backwater country kid, Saskatoon was like Manhattan to me. The big city, full of bright lights and almost unspeakably exciting. A hotel with a pool, and malls, and arcades to go to with my dad's brother who lived in Saskatoon. Vivid memories of specific video games play an outsized role in my memories of my childhood vacations. I can tell you in what cities and what hotels I played Robotron, or Popeye, or Q-Bert. After doing whatever we were doing all day, we were back at the hotel, and we got to go to the pool. My uncle was still hanging out with us, and keeping an eye on us as we played and swam. I'd never taken any swimming lessons, so on the rare occasions we'd get to swim in a pool, I always followed the injunction to stay in the shallow end. That meant I was left my own devices as my sister and my uncle were playing a game of catch with a beach ball in the deep end. Seeing me, my uncle waved me over to join them. And for some reason, maybe just because a grown-up was giving me license, I ducked under the floating plastic divider that marked the shift to the deep end. I was in over my head. Keep in mind that the sequence of events here is pretty unclear to me. I'm not sure, at this point, what's an actual memory and what's a reconstruction I put together after the fact. Anyway, my sister got out of the pool at some point, and it was just my uncle and I playing catch. Presumably, at some point, he got bored of the game, and he got out of the pool as well, leaving me on my own. This particular uncle was subsequently kept out of the picture for a very long while. I was alone at the deep end. I don't think I panicked, but I don't really know what happened next. One instant, I was effortlessly staying afloat, and the next, I was drowning. I guess I could say drowning was a singular experience. It seemed like both a fearsome struggle and something I was immediately detached from. I was thrashing about, fighting a losing battle to keep my head above water, and at the same time, I had a sort of third-person perspective, like I was looking down on myself from above. That's one thing I remember clearly. I think the only point of reference I had to drowning was in cartoons, and I recall giddily thinking to myself, "I'm going down for the third time." It was like a punchline or something. And from that detached point of view, I somehow knew that was it. I slipped under the water. I drowned. Well, I guess I shouldn't be too melodramatic. Obviously, that wasn't the end of the story. The sheer unlikeliness of the things that happened next wasn't something that fazed me when I was younger. It was just what happened. With hindsight, though, I'm totally astonished, And maybe this is why, later in life, I spent so much time wondering how we could find any sort of meaning or value when things are so contingent, so random, so absurd. Long story short, I got lucky. First, my sister was walking back to the pool right after I drowned, and she saw me, motionless on the bottom. She dived in and pulled me out. She was 11 when she did this, pulling out an 8-year-old boy. And then, another incredible thing. There was an American doctor staying in the hotel. He was staying overnight in Saskatoon, on the way up north to do some hunting. He was on his way to dinner, walking past the pool just as I happened to be retrieved. He gave me mouth-to-mouth and revived me. What if he'd gone to dinner a few minutes earlier, or just decided to stay in his room? I vaguely remember being awake on the pool deck, and I remember being in the ambulance, although I wasn't entirely sure why I was there. And then the emergency ward, and oxygen masks, and heart monitors, and having blood taken. In fact, one of my stronger memories of being in the hospital was having a lot of blood taken. I didn't seem too much worse for wear. To me, the whole hospital experience was less arduous than when I'd gotten my tonsils out the year before. The adults did a good job of staying calm around me, but they must have been freaking out. No one knew how long I'd been out on the bottom of the pool, if I'd been without oxygen for long enough to have brain damage. And speaking of freaked out adults, I can't imagine how it must have been for my parents. For my dad to have to discover his brother had not done a good job of supervising me, but even more for my mom. Getting a call late at night that there's been an accident, that she better get to Saskatoon right away. It was over a 3-hour drive. I can't imagine how stressful that must have been. But the strange part is, I didn't seem to suffer any lasting effects. I was in the ICU, and then a general ward, and there was a blur of doctors and nurses, and then I was released. As far as I remember now, I went home from Saskatoon and back to school. And back to life as it was before. Somehow, I wasn't traumatized by the experience. I was never afraid of water or anything after that. Quite sensibly, come summer, I was enrolled in swimming lessons. They took place in the chilly waters of Waskasoo Lake, and for some reason, my lessons always seemed to be first thing in the morning, before the sun could warm up the lake at all. I had a lot of time to think about how cold those lakes could be. My main memory of that first swimming badge is taking long showers in the beach house after, trying to get that lake chill out of my system. So I never became a particularly good swimmer, but I learned enough to be safe. My family kept in touch with the American doctor, and for several years at Christmas, he sent me a gift subscription to Ranger Rick magazine. But maybe there were some lasting effects. For years after, whenever I felt some sort of lacking in myself, I wondered if that was the part of me that was damaged, if that was what I'd left at the bottom of the pool. There were even a few times where I felt my lacking so acutely that I felt somehow angry that I'd been brought up to the water's surface. The next summer, my dad took me on a big canoe trip, 5 days, circumnavigating Kingsmere Lake. This was a couple swimming batches later, so I wonder if my mom slept any easier to see my father taking me to the water again. Or maybe not, seeing as we took the trip in the shadow of a tragedy, one that had eerie echoes of the trip we were about to take, and what had happened back in Saskatoon. A father and son had been on a canoe trip to see Grey Owl's cabin, and on their way back down the east side of Kingsmere, the weather turned, and their boat was tipped. They had life jackets and tried to stay with their canoe, but even in summer, the water was cold enough that hypothermia took the boy. The father managed to swim to shore and somehow ran down the lakeside trail to the road to flag down help. But it was much too late in coming, and the sun was gone. They dragged the lake to bring him home, but to this day, the body has never been found. The drowned boy was 16 years old. Our trip was quite an undertaking. A big canoe, a big green Coleman cooler, our tent, and fishing gear. We actually took the long way, heading up the west side of the lake and going for a side excursion on the first day through Bagwell, Lily, and Clare Lakes. You had to portage between them, and they were off limits to motorboats. It was like we were all alone in the world, and we weren't in such a rush that we couldn't sample the fishing in all the lakes. Fishing was one of my father's passions at the time. It wasn't until our third night that we made it to the north shore of the lake and made camp. Then we'd have another side trip the next day, up to Adjuan and Grey Owl's cabin. Archie's cabin, the famous one with the built-in beaver lodge, was right down on the lake shore. That was open and you could go right in. There was a guest book there, and with the deadly serious, morbid interest of a 10-year-old, I turned back a page to find the drowned boy's name, written in his own hand. Anna Jureo, Grey Owl's wife, had her own cabin up from the shore a bit. It was a proper cottage, not open to visiting wildlife, nor to inquisitive tourists. Archie's grave was up there as well. We'd portaged to Adjuan. Most people just hiked up, and we were the only boat on the lake that day. I remember that like a photograph. No, like being in a photograph. The surface of the water was so glassy and calm, the world so quiet, hemmed in by forest on all sides. I remember that Adjuan had the most amazing fishing my dad or I had ever seen. Literally every cast brought up a prized pickerel. Though when we got back to our campsite and my dad gutted them, we found out that they all had some sort of worms. And the next day we set out, heading back south, now down the east side of the lake. Same trip that the drowned boy and his father didn't complete. Because the incident was so recent, there was still a buoy marking the spot where the canoe had overturned. Maybe it's an invented memory, but I remember our canoe going past it close enough that I could reach out and brush my fingers against it. And then we floated past, and we were soon enough back at the south end of the lake, leaving the drowned boy behind. But maybe he wasn't alone. So anyway, back to Archie. It's an acknowledged fact that he was a drunk, and a mean one at that. He'd head down from the park and go to Prince Albert, the closest small city, when he needed to go on a bender. The official version is a little different, but when I lived at the park, there was a story that was told by the old wardens, one that was told to them when they were still young by the previous old wardens. According to this unofficial history, Archie was down in PA on a binge, and the RCMP called the wardens to come and bring him home. So they did, and they were hauling Archie back to Adjuan when he up and died on them. Having already had their fill of hauling Archie back to his cabin, the secret history is that the wardens didn't bother taking him back. They just dumped his body into the Kingsmere waters and went back home. Later on, they found some rocks to fill up his grave. I have no idea if there's any truth to that. It might have just been a story old wardens told to impressionable kids to spook them a little. But when it was told to me, I believed it implicitly, and it became a part of my personal mythology. Not long after that canoe trip, My family moved back to Manitoba, but I still carried Kingsmere and Adjuan and Archie and the Drowned Boy in my thoughts. Over time, the stories got blurred a little more, and in my mind, at some point, it just became an accepted fact that they had dumped Archie's body in that very same spot where the Drowned Boy would later capsize and lose his battle with hypothermia. Maybe Archie was lonely down there, I figured, and he called up the winds to tip over that canoe and bring him some company. Maybe the Drowned Boy's ghostly living body is still down there, keeping Archie company for all time. Friends, keeping each other from loneliness. There were some times, in the less happy stretches of my life, that I thought I'd become a Drowned Boy as well. Or that maybe I never really made it out of that pool in Saskatoon. And there were times when I thought I could have somehow ended up with those two, down at the bottom on Kingsmere Lake. But for better or for worse, well, for better as I believe now, I learned how to swim, and I decided to stay above the water surface.
by Luca Capone. If you want to find more information on the program, feel free to reach out at the Night Shift TO on Twitter and Mixcloud, and Capone Luca on Instagram.
Nice. Brian Kingston. This is your Indie Wake-Up Call. Playing anything new and everything indie. Garage rock, hip-hop, folk, punk, and electropop. New, Canadian, and even local. Indie Wake-Up handles your morning. Here for you, Kingston. Weekday mornings from 8 to 10. On the one, the only, CFRC 101.9 FM.
Visit the Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
Right.
Hey.
I want a banana peel.
Everyone just needs a little love.
Living like a doctor.